This is the Countdown to Opening Day Special, brought to you by the JMH Law Firm, Lakeside Roofing, and the Angry Beaver.
Hey, welcome to the Countdown to Opening Day. A lot of good stuff for you guys going on today. I don't want to waste too much time getting to it. Tim McKernan was able to sit down and do a ton of great interviews this offseason with current Cardinals and past Cardinals that you guys will want to hear from. We're going to start out with John Mozeliak, the president of the St. Louis Cardinals here. And Tim McKernan did a really good job with this. Here you go.
Mo.
So I can't wait to hear the background on the Goldschmidt extension. Like, I see you wandering around. I say wandering. That isn't a good word. Walking around. Wandering makes it sound like, you know, like you're...
I'm lost.
Right, exactly.
Aimlessly looking for something to do. But a lot like you.
thank you so much. We're off to a great start. Yeah. So I see you with the coffee in the morning. And is that how it was? You just saw Goldschmidt working out and you're like, you know what? I think this is going well. I'm going to take a shot.
You know, really what was behind it was more to the point of, we have a window, spring training, and is it worth trying to pursue something? You know, one of the things I was fearful of, or at least I was thinking about in this particular situation, was I didn't want to get down a path where all of a sudden we were having trouble finding a way to solve the problem. Because, you know, when you do that, sometimes there ends up being some animosity or it just becomes uncomfortable. And here is a young man who, you know, we didn't know all that well, right? And it'd be one thing to take someone that I've worked with for 5 years and, you know, try to do a trial balloon, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work because you know each other. But it's certainly a lot different when, I think, from a personality standpoint or maybe, you know, a relationship standpoint, you're just not that comfortable yet. And so I didn't want to lose trust or have him look at the St. Louis Cardinals in an odd way, because, you know, obviously when we made this deal, as I mentioned the other day at the press conference, was, you know, the strategy for the extension really was being defined as hope. And so as I was thinking through that, I just didn't want to damage that in any way. So it was a little bit maybe more delicate than perhaps a normal way to think about it. But so, in a very casual, non-threatening way, I decided I would just see where this may or may not go. And of course, if he had said, look, you know what, I haven't spent a day in St. Louis, I'm not sure what this is all about, I think we should wait, I would have waited. But, you know, he said, let's try. And you know, that's what we did. And so, you know, 2.5 weeks later or so, here we are. And I think it's exciting news for the Cardinals. It's, you know, when you get this type of player, it's very rare, especially for this organization to actually get someone like that during an acquisition. So, you know, we're excited about it. I think he's a great fit for this organization. I think our fan base, our city is really going to embrace him. And, you know, the good news is we have him for 6 years.
Yeah. When I was interviewing him a couple different times, I thought, this guy reminds me kind of like a Scott Rolen / Matt Holliday. Like, it's just, he's baseball. He just cares about baseball. He's very careful to not be an I or me guy. He's a baseball guy. Is there any player since you've been in St. Louis that he reminds you of? Does he remind you of those guys? Anybody I'm missing?
So that's sort of interesting, right? Because in both cases, I do think those are good, very good comps, first off, because they are, you know, a lot of Midwestern values, guys that like to be a part of something that we do here in St. Louis. And I think both Scott Rolen and Matt Holliday embrace that. But when we acquired Matt Holliday, you know, got to spend about 6 months, or I should, yeah, well, 3 months of the season with him before we talked extension. And even in Scott Rolen's case, got to spend time with him before we started talking extension. So it was just a different feel of how to proceed with that, whereas this was, you know, something of a little bit of an unknown. But I think from a personality standpoint, I think you've nailed it. You know, he is definitely a we person, not an I guy. He is someone that is very thoughtful about wanting to engage in the community and be a part of the community. I think he wants to do it a lot like Matt did, where people may not even know about it, and I think that's a great compliment. He also kind of reminds me a little bit of Matt Carpenter, too, when you talk about, you know, people that just like baseball and like to play it. And, you know, I think the greatest compliment you can give someone that, that puts on a uniform is they're a baseball player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I spend time around him, that's what you see.
I can't wait to get the answer to this question. And I know that you're equally excited to answer it. When God, I wish we had video of this. I really do.
Yeah, we're doing more fun to watch.
Were you guys ever in on Bryce Harper?
So I think when you talk about free agents, I think you know my answer is always going to be that's not something we can discuss. You know, when you look at – when you sit in my seat or you sit in Bill DeWitt's seat, you know, whenever you say never, that's a long word. And so to understand – what the free agent market looks like, to understand what trade markets look like, really the only way you can truly understand that is to at least make connections, to communicate. And so when someone asks me, were you in or out, it's not for me to divulge what we were doing or not doing. But what I can say is it is our responsibility to understand what markets look like, because you can't make smart, prudent decisions if you don't understand those.
Okay. So when I asked, for example, Bill DeWitt, the chairman, on the program about a month and a half ago, I guess. And I said, you know, some fans are wondering, you know, you guys were in on Stanton, you acknowledge that, but then now seemingly uncomfortable with the idea of Harper. And then he said, well, you have to understand, keep in mind, since the Stanton discussions, we've acquired Ozuna and Goldschmidt. So it's not like we're just hoarding.
Things evolve, right. And where you are today might not be where you are tomorrow. So I think the one thing that people always sort of in baseball do is they take that moment in time and that's what they want to remember or anchor to. It's not that at all. You know, you look at where we are today, but we weren't there 30 days ago. What have we done since then? Jose Martinez gets a 2-year extension. Miles Michaelis gets a 4-year contract, and then obviously Goldie. And so it's always moving. Mm-hmm. And so the fluidity of a baseball year or calendar is really nonstop, and so when you take that moment in time and say, oh, you were chasing Stanton, so why doesn't that connect the dots to all of this? Well, it doesn't, because other things happen. And you know, the I think really the takeaway our fan base should have is that, you know, we're always active. We're trying to always look at ways to not only improve our team on a short term basis, but think about it in the long view as well. And I think when I talk like that, sometimes I think people get annoyed. They're like, just do it now. And now's not always the game you want to win. You know, certainly we understand and recognize the importance of this season, and we're not going to run from that. But we're also trying to still make sure that you know, 2020 or 2021, we still have a successful franchise and a successful organization that people can be proud of.
Dexter Fowler, I would say, if you had to rank the names we heard the most this offseason, Dan McLaughlin and I, as we were doing our show, it would be Harper, actually more so than Goldschmidt, and then Dexter Fowler, just always talked about. How would you evaluate Dexter Fowler at this point versus, say, 6 months ago, both as a ball player and then also where he is mentally, emotionally?
Well, I think first off, he's healthy. Obviously, his season ended last year with an injury, a broken bone. I think the good news for him is he was able to regain his strength. He has a lot of confidence in his physical ability at this point, which is a very, very good place for him to be. And I also think that with the managerial change, the coaching changes, he's in a different spot, and I would define that as a very good spot. So, you know, look, this team is built to win. You look at Dexter's 2 years with the Cardinals, you know, I'd be really happy if we could get what we saw in 17. Mm-hmm. And I think that would bode very well for team success. So, you know, overall, I think he's in a good spot. I mean, obviously last year was something he wants to put in the rearview mirror, and that's what he's going to do.
You play golf with him this spring?
Yeah, we did play one time.
I didn't get a chance to play with you.
No, you weren't invited. nor probably will you be.
It seems like it seems like you don't want to make absolute statements, and it seems like there you're making one.
Yeah, that's true. I apologize.
I was going to ask about Craig Kimbrell, and it seems like I noticed that wasn't a sincere apology. I was going to ask about Craig Kimbrell, and it seems like even though you weren't intentionally doing it, sounds like you were talking about that like that was never even on the scope.
It really wasn't. It was I feel like when you looked at our club and you look at how we're coming together, and you know, I think our vision of the Hicks Reyes model in our bullpen was something that we felt pretty strongly about early on in our off season. Now there's obviously some risk in that when you're talking about someone's health, especially who's lost two seasons, but you know, you can see why we're excited about that. And then of course when you have somebody like an Andrew Miller now in your bullpen, it just gives a manager a lot of flexibility. So the good news is there are relievers that just want specific innings. Just they want to understand their role. And the good news is Andrew Miller, he defines his role as I want to face the most difficult part of their lineup, especially if there's left-handers in there, but the best part of their lineup. And so it's easier then to say, okay, if that happens to come up in the seventh, eighth, or ninth, when to deploy that resource. And so for us, I think that just gives Schulte and the staff a lot more flexibility. And, you know, when you look at that, that's why we weren't overly aggressive in the right-hand relief market.
How do you view Carlos Martinez's role? I realize his status is still TBD, but how do you view his role from your chair?
Well, I think I don't know the answer yet. I guess I could say it to you this way, that if we're looking to get the quickest return, it would likely be in the bullpen. If we decide we want to be a little more patient with the rehab process, then there is a chance he could come back as a starter. But I really don't like to answer that question yet because he's just started his throwing program. I think as we flip the calendar to April, we'll have a better sense of when that return might be based on need.
Were you concerned at all, honestly, on the offensive production in spring? I was around Ozuna in the clubhouse one time, and he was asked about, like, he was 1-for-14 at the time, and he goes, come on, it's spring. But, you know, but if a guy's having a good spring pitching or something, they go, well, this is great. And then if he's not, then they go, well, it's spring. So it seems like there's kind of a convenient double standard when evaluating these things. How do you evaluate it when the team offensively wasn't necessarily raking?
You know, I do think, like, it's very dangerous to use spring training as an evaluating tool because not everybody's approaching it the same way.
Yeah.
You know, not to get bore you with, like, details, but somebody from a pitching standpoint might be just trying to work on his changeup. And obviously, in the heat of the battle, you're probably not going to be doing that, but in a exhibition style game, you can do that. I think, like hitters want to hit, right? So when they're 1-for-14, that's frustrating, but they also know it doesn't count. So I think there's lies sort of that underlying thing. But you know, for me, the biggest thing about looking at offense, you know, when you looked at like Harrison Bader, for example, and you said, you know, after the first 20 days of camp, you know, he's not hitting, he's really struggling, but how many hard outs did he have? I mean, he had a lot. And so, you know, to judge it on sort of baseball card stats, I think can be a bit misleading. And I've been a part of camps, too, where someone does have like a, you know, a 400 batting average and really did rake. And then you end up sending them back to double A or triple A, and they end up sort of normalizing. Yeah. So, you know, you got to be careful you're not buying fool's gold. But you also want to make sure that you are seeing a steady progression in what you want done. And I think the theme under Mike Schilt has been, we're not here to get our work in. We're here to get better. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's been very intentional on how they've approached each day. And I think the thing that I admire most is, it's not just that sort of global phrase where you and I are here to work and we're here to get better. There's very specific curriculum for an individual like yourself and versus myself to make sure that we are optimizing our time at the ballpark. And my takeaway from that has been one that I think has been much more effective and efficient from helping our club grow.
There's a sense that I gather in this camp that there is confidence here that kind of takes me back to when I was covering the team on TV in the early 2000s and then kind of the second wave that started in 2009.
I don't remember that time.
Oh, it was great. I had a full head of hair. I had hope. I think a lot of people had high expectations. And then, of course, since then, there's been a great letdown. There's been hair loss.
Career,
and then a radio. But, I mean, the show is so good. I know you podcast, and we're grateful for that support. But since then, I feel like that confidence, not with me, has returned. I'm still very insecure. But I feel like around here, people are incredibly confident. Like I saw Harrison Bader, like somebody said, the Cardinals' Pacoda was 88.5 or something like that. And he tweeted out like an eye roll emoji. And other. And I asked him about it. He goes, oh, because we're going to win way more than 88.5 games. Carpenter said, if we don't make it to the postseason, it would be a big, you know, disappointment. There's confidence here. Not to say that they weren't confident before, you weren't confident before, but I just sense something different as you guys head into the 2019 season. Your perspective on the confidence of the team.
Well, I do think when you look at this team and, again, how the last 6 weeks have evolved, there is this bounce in this clubhouse. And in terms of expectations, they're real. They're high. You don't want, you know, false bravado. What you want is a group of people that understand they got to pull in the right same direction to make this work. And I think that's the type of buy-in you're seeing. And so the approach and the strategy of this group has been impressive, but there is reason to be excited. I mean, obviously, when you look at your club and when you're doing that sort of analysis from year over year over year, sometimes it's hard to say you've gotten better, but it's pretty clear this team, this lineup, this rotation is better than it was a year ago. And so there's reason to say, like, we should be good, or we should feel confident about what we're doing. And, you know, I'm glad that players feel good about where they are right now. You know, it's easy to sit upstairs and in this office and say, oh, you know, we like our team. You know, well, when you're one of the architects behind it, then you're supposed to say that. But, you know, in fairness, it really is about this group understanding expectations and what they want to do. And, you know, sort of to quote Mr. Goldschmidt, we expect exciting things to happen.
Yeah. Final question. I put this to the people because I know their questions are going to be better than mine. Is there an organization or GM that you model? Like, I kind of sometimes see a parallel with the San Antonio Spurs. Like, it's been sustained greatness with some championships. I realize sometimes the NBA kind of flies under the radar in St. Louis. Some might say the Patriots, where, yeah, we want to win championships, but you always talk about sustained, you know, competitive baseball. And that's what the organization has provided going back to 2000. So is there a style, a manager, an executive, an organization that you look to and say, I really like what they do and I like to try to mimic some of what they do?
You know, that's an interesting question. And, you know, I would say, like, when I was younger, I would always, like, try to understand, like, best business practices or you know, what are other, you know, whether it's business, sports, or mm-hmm. baseball, like, what are other people doing that maybe we should be doing? And there are things that I've read or have had the opportunity to speak to people to help grow this organization. But I've always felt like, I would say probably right around, you know, sort of that 2008, 2009 point where there was the realization of, look, we don't want to be copying anybody. We want to be finding people copying us. And so that became the mindset of, instead of me reaching out, I was hoping people would start reaching out to us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we have gotten to that point. And I think that's a great compliment to not only this organization, but the people I've been able to work with.
Thank you, Mo.
Thank you.
That was John Mozeliak, the president of your St. Louis Cardinals. Of course, all of this brought to you by JMH Law Firm, Lakeside Roofing, and the Angry Beaver. Thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors for helping us put on the countdown to opening day. A lot of really good stuff. Hope you enjoyed that with John Mozeliak. Tim McKernan, of course, as always, did a really good job here. Up next here, Brian Jordan, the former two-star athlete and former St. Louis Cardinal here, sat down with Tim McKernan to discuss the St. Louis Cardinals.
I wanted to ask you, I'm glad we're sitting down and talking about it, because right when Kyler Murray's situation was going on, I'm sure you've been asked about it, but I was like, I wonder what Brian Jordan thinks. I thought for sure he was going to play baseball, and then all of a sudden, what did you think going into it? And now that he's made his decision, what do you think as we sit here with the Heisman Trophy winner?
Well, I expected his decision. I mean, how can you not, you know, make that decision? You've played all your life, baseball, football. You have a love for both sports. And this is a great opportunity, man. Nobody in the world, very, minimal people, myself, Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, right. You know, Tim Tebow and those guys never made it to the big level, but, you know, you have a chance to do something very special, and why wouldn't you do that? You got a great agent, Sky Boris, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows where the money is, and I thought it was great that he got drafted by Oakland Athletics' 9th pick. They gave him $4.66 million. That's nothing to, you know, pout about. Right. But he has an opportunity to make a lot more on the football field. And for me, you know, when I first heard about the situation and then the whole Kingsbury making that announcement when he was in college hey, I would take him with the first pick.
Just a random little interview back, you know, in like October interview, when they were getting ready to play Oklahoma.
And that could be reality, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has an opportunity to – that would be the perfect scenario for Kyler Murray
to go to Arizona.
To go to Arizona. One, spring training is there for athletics. Everybody knows that. And it's going to be important for him to spend 12 months football. So that gives him an opportunity to work with the offensive coordinator while he's in spring training.
Right, right, right.
Get out there with his receivers. Get your timing down. And be ready for day one of football. Now he gets to play spring training. Maybe play a month of minor league baseball, keep himself in great baseball shape, and then focus on football. Yeah. Go play your 3-year rookie contract or whatever out, which you're going to make $10 million, $15 million up front, and I think he can be an elite quarterback.
Do you? I was curious how much you'd watched him at Oklahoma.
You know what? The way he performed against Alabama opened my eyes to where I feel like this kid could be special in the NFL. And we all see how the NFL is going now toward college offenses. You know, the running, shooting, gun down the field offenses with mobile quarterbacks. So he fits the bill. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's 5'9 or 5'11, whatever they come up with. But the fact that he can throw the ball down the field, run out of the pocket, and be very effective at the next level, to me, makes him different. Yeah. And for me, I would love to see it, for him to go out there, play some minor league baseball along the way, continue to move up in level in those first 3 years like I did, and then say in 3 years, all right, I'm going to go play baseball.
Your defensive back, Deion defensive back, and then also special teams,
right,
and then Bo Jackson running back. Is
running
it
back
different, any capacity for
well,
a quarterback?
That's why I say it has to be the perfect scenario for him, because quarterback, you have to play football, even not on the field, off the field in the off season, preparing for the next season. You got to have great relationships. You got to know every offensive player's assignment, the defense that you're going to face. And that takes 12 months a year to get all that in your mind and be a successful quarterback at that next level. That's why it's a difficult task for a quarterback. Deion, Bo, and myself, it was instinctive. It was athletic. And, you know, we could go out there and perform at the drop of a dime.
Yeah.
But to be a quarterback in the NFL, man, it's totally different.
When you look back on your decision to do both, are you like, man, I'm glad I did? Or are you like, ah, man, I wish I would have done this differently? I'm really curious because, I mean, so like you said, there's like four dudes ever who've had that chance.
Well, the fact that I'm 51 and I'm still playing basketball, showing up at fantasy camps and running around and having fun, I made the right decision. At that moment, at that time, I wasn't ready to give up football. I was alternate in the Pro Bowl my third year. I was ready to take off and be that man at safety and hopefully be that stable and making a Pro Bowl every year. But, you know, for me, I wanted to give baseball full opportunity, which I didn't in my first 3 years. And it worked out great. After those first 3 years, the Raiders called to get me back on the football field, and I was that close to going to Raider Nation. But Cardinals offered me another 3-year deal, and I said,
that's it.
Longevity is important. Yeah. So it worked out great.
Hey, man, you know, the Cardinals, obviously, game 6 of the 2011 World Series, if I ever see anything like that, you know, I mean, but when, you know, covering the team, I covered the team a little bit when you were playing, whether it be the 2004 team with Edmonds and the catch and the walk-off home run and, you know, 2006 winning the World Series, 2011 with Freeze's home run. The next year they came back against the Nationals. There have been all these crazy, incredible moments, and so many fan bases don't even get one of those. But still, one of my favorites ever is Game 4, the 96 NLCS, and you guys were up 2-1 on the Braves. It looked like that game was going nowhere.
Right.
And Dimitri Young gets a triple.
which is, and it was to left field, if I'm not mistaken, which is a phenomenon, because it's not like that was Vince Coleman.
Yeah.
And then tied up in the bottom of the eighth, and here comes Brian Jordan. And that ballpark, man, I'd been to a lot of games there. It was shaking when you hit that home.
It was an unbelievable moment. And I remember Dimitri in that position. And he was on deck, and I said, look, whatever you do, get a hit. Get me in a position to win this game. And, you know, to see him go out there, and he was such a competitor. I loved him. To come through like that, yeah. I mean, he pumped me up. And to be able to hit that big hit, I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that night was just crazy for me because my son actually collapsed in the kids' room. And so I was –
from excitement or from just totally something else?
He was burning hot, playing around, running around all night. And they said he just collapsed, and they were taking him to the hospital. So here it is, in that moment of great emotions and excitement, I was grounded real quick, man. And,
really? Did you know that going? You know that until the game was
I
over?
I didn't know until the game was over. I got in the locker room, and I see all these cameras around me, and all of a sudden somebody's in my ear saying, hey, they're taking your son to the hospital right now. He collapsed. And at that moment, cameras and everybody, I was out.
It's over, yeah.
I was out. So it was crazy emotions that night. But he was fine. And, you know, later that night, I got a chance to celebrate
a
little bit. Yeah.
We've had a number of, like, Braves people on the show over the years. And, like, Mazzoni, I think Cox, Chipper, I did a show with Edmund. So we would get these guys on, Justice, and they would come on. And they go, I'm telling you, when Eckersley pointed at our dugout, closing out,
man,
and they all use that, and I'm like,
you know, and that was the first question I asked Bobby Cox when I signed with the Braves as a free agent. I said, Bobby, I said, what turned everything around for you guys?
Down 3-1.
Yeah, 3-1 that night. And he said, look, when X pointed at this dugout, Smokesy called a meeting right away, and it's like you waking up a sleeping dog. And that woke up those Braves. And I remember telling, you know, my teammates, I said, we cannot go back to Atlanta. We got to win it here. And to see Atlanta turn it around with those veteran pitching staff, man, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. We were that close.
Yeah, I know.
And if you remember, that was Ozzie's last year.
I know.
It would have been a perfect scenario for him to, you know, play in that World Series and go out on top. You know, so, you know, that was a unique year, a very unique year. The start to the finish, amazing season.
What was so unique about it? I mean, you didn't have the veterans there.
We didn't have the veterans.
It kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I look at that roster, and then you look at some of these Cardinals teams, like, going back, and it's like, that roster, some great talent, but it doesn't, like, have, like, when you talk about, like, 2004 Cardinals with Edmonds rolling,
right,
Pujols,
right.
You know what I mean?
Didn't have a lot of stars, and, you know, the true stars were a lot older. But we had a mix of old and new and younger guys, and the whole Tony La Russa thing coming in 96.
Yeah.
And, you know, from the opening day with Ozzie and the Royce Clayton situation,
yeah.
I mean, it was an unbelievable season of a lot of turmoil throughout the season. And to be able to, for the team to pull together. I remember Pagnozzi calling a meeting in the middle of that season. We were in L.A. saying, as a team, as players, we gotta come together and take over and be us.
Yeah.
And we did that, and the season turned around, and, man, what a great finish.
Oh, yeah, that was incredible for that team.
It
went away from playing the Yankees in a World Series.
Yeah,
that was something else. Best memory for you on the baseball field?
Best memory on the field?
St. Louis or otherwise? Cause
you know, it had to be Atlanta because, when you're playing with great Cy Young winners, but to make it to the World Series for the first time in my career in 99 against those Yankees, it was a thrill, man. It's something all your life you fight for, it, that big game. And I don't want to talk about the results of it, but you know what? But just to get there and feel the intensity, man, it was incredible.
Brian, I've enjoyed it, man.
All right. Enjoyed it too, man.
Thank you.
That was Brian Jordan, former two-sport athlete, a member of the Atlanta Falcons and also your St. Louis Cardinals here, Tim Kernan. Sitting down with that interview, of course. Thank you to our sponsors, JMH Law Firm, Lakeside Roofing, and the Angry Beaver. Coming up next, after the break, Tim McKernan is going to sit down with Alex Reyes. and discuss a lot of really pertinent things for this upcoming season. So we'll be back in a few minutes with that.
It's the Countdown to Opening Day, sponsored by the JMH Law Firm. Contact him at 314-827-6222. Lakeside Roofing. Find them online at lakesideroofing.com. And by The Angry Beaver, located at 730 South Broadway.
Opening day, dude. Truly, a lot of teams got a lot of cool traditions. Probably the coolest in all of sports is the Cardinals opening day. And it's one ceremony and it's one deal.
Cardinal Hall of Famers coming out in the red jackets, standing in front of home plate. It's pretty special.